Hey, book besties, we're your hosts, Kelsey
and Nikki,
and this is For the Shelf Podcast.
Before we get started, this podcast is intended for a mature audience. Use of profanity is a definite, as well as discussions of mature sexual themes and graphic content. Listener discretion is advised.
This week, we will be discussing How Does It Feel by Janine O'Reilly, but first, let's get into last week's bookish news. Okay, so I know you have something that you want to talk about, and it's a hot take. So maybe let's do that first, and then we can cool back down some of these others.
Okay, so there's a proposed bill in Oklahoma, and I've been hearing about this for a couple weeks, but it really kind of hit home. I was on Instagram the other day, and CM Nacosta, the author of Morning Glory Milking Farm, the one that had posted about it. I don't know if she lives in Oklahoma or whatever. But she was talking about, well, let me tell you the bill first, and then we'll get into there. So there is a senator in Oklahoma who has proposed this anti-pornography bill, which if it's passed, it could target romance authors and the availability of romance novels. So basically, it would impose a $10,000 fine per book, per volume, either to the author for writing it, having it, or to a bookstore for, holding it and distributing it. So that's pretty scary.
Yeah.
And it falls under this, it doesn't necessarily fall under the pornography part, but they're twisting it around so that romance novels fall under the obscene materials.
That's ridiculous.
Portion. And so that's, to me, that's just terrifying.
Yeah.
That you're going to take an entire state and say, hey, romance novels, you no longer can possess them, even as a buyer or as an author, have your novels or sell and distribute them.
Well, and it's like, it's so broad, like, because there are just general fiction novels that have romance and like steamy scenes into them. Like, I'm thinking of like Verity, for example, that's technically a mystery thriller. And there is, like, sex scenes in that book. And, like, even some of the historical fiction, like, while it's written a little differently, like, and then, like, yeah, where is the line that it just has, like, you know, suggestive sexual scenes, written out sexual scenes, like, somebody in the book, like, has had sex before, like,
right. Who draws the line? Who comes up with the parameters? And then who imposes this? But like I said, in the constant Morning Glory Milking Farm, Morning Glory Milking Farm, which if you're not familiar, is a human/minotaur romance. And the female main character works at a scientific facility that collects minotaur semen to be used for scientific purposes. So she is a milker, and that's how she meets this minotaur. So this book would, I'm assuming, it would definitely fall under the obscene materials.
Yeah,
this is a great book, by the way. It is funny. It is hysterical. Totally read it. But, you know, the author was you know, talking on Instagram that make sure that you get physical copies of your books because they're going to, you know, if this happens, Kindle Unlimited, those books won't be available if you live in that state.
That was my next, you know. It's like, how does that work with, like, okay, so let's say Barnes & Noble, Target, like, indie stores, like, they can't sell it, okay? And then if you're an author in Oklahoma, you can't write it. Okay, but what about, what about Amazon? Like, what about, like, all of the...
What you were saying about Kindle Unlimited, it's that, you know, you're only paying for the right to read that book. Just because you buy a book on Kindle or you have a subscription to Kindle Unlimited doesn't mean that you own that book or own that copy. They can just remove that.
Yeah, but what about like Audible or like this is going to be
a seltzer. Think about like Pornhub, for example. So in the state of Florida and Virginia and a couple other states, you can no longer access that on the internet, like through like a regular, I mean, I'm sure there's ways around it, but like the regular person can't do that. And so whatever kind of filter or servers or whatever that Pornhub Incorporated has just makes it so that you can't access it by state. So I'm assuming if Pornhub can do that, then why can't Kindle, Amazon, Barnes & Noble do that state by state? I mean, think about this, like with the Scholastic Book Fairs. You know, a couple years ago, specifically in the state of Florida, they removed, like, I don't know, 30% of titles that you were allowed to stock at your Scholastic Book Fair for Florida schools because it didn't meet with the book banning and the, you know, the Florida school criteria for what is appropriate materials. So I don't think it's going to be difficult for them, which is scary. But the other thing she was saying is that it can also target book covers. So she was encouraging authors to revisit their book covers
and make like
to make sure that they look more discreet.
But see, that implies a problem that we've talked about previously where the covers are too cutesy for the material in the book. The covers...
Right, and that's why middle schoolers are picking up that hockey one.
Spray gun,
because the covers are terrible.
A lot of these contemporary romance books are having these cutesy covers now, and they don't need to. They don't need to have the cutesy covers. Like, when I pick up, like, I'm thinking of one book in particular. When I pick up Den of Vipers, or when I pick up Haunting Adeline,
right?
Like, this is a pretty good representation of what's going to be in this book, right? Like, I'm not, like, looking at, like, pastellies and cartoon characters and then opening it, and it's, like, knife play and blood play.
There's just some snakes and flowers on the cover, which, if you look at all of, like, romanticy, not the Den of Vipers is a romanticy, all the covers are now these like abstract
flowers and boxes. It's titled Den of Vipers and it's a skull and snakes and roses.
Oh, yeah, I don't think you're mistaking that. But no, here's the solution. And I've said this before. You know, we have ratings on movies. You know, we have G, PG, PG-13, R, NC-17, whatever. Why can't we just put that on a book?
We need to.
Why can't we just put that on the book and that solves the problem? Then, you know, all you pissed off parents that are mad that the school accidentally bought a copy of Icebreaker because the librarian didn't know, well, it will say right on the back. It's got a rating. It's rated R.
Yeah.
Problem fucking solved. See, I've asked it. Let's just do this. And then people can...
I have seen, actually, now that I think about it, a couple of newer publicized books that say that on the back, you know, suggested or whatever, 18 up, like, mature content. Like, I have seen a couple, but that I think is dependent on the author and the publishing house. But I mean, now at least we're kind of getting more consistent with putting a mature notice or at least the triggers in the front of the books. How long did it take for us to be able to get that?
True.
Yeah, I just think like...
And a lot of young adult books, I shouldn't say it not, but a lot of young adult books will say, you know, 13 up, 14 and up.
Yeah.
I have noticed that.
Yeah. But I just, like, I'm so excited that people are getting back into reading. You know, it has been my favorite, like, hobby, my favorite thing for as long as I can remember. And I'm so glad that it's becoming popular again. And we're moving away from the televisions and we're moving away from all of that and, like, engrossing into books. I'm so thankful for Book Talk for that. But... yeah, now we need the publishing houses and we need some authors and we need other people to kind of get with the times a little bit and help that. So that way we're not having all of these issues and having things policed and taken away because while we're progressing and we're moving forward as like readers and getting the younger generations into reading, we need to be doing, the publishers need to be doing the responsible thing and making sure that it's safe for everyone, regardless of how you feel politically. It does. There needs to be a change. There needs to be an update. We need to be like, hey, yeah, like.
Right. Because think about, like, I don't know if I can relate this to a book, but think about the time that you accidentally walked in on your parents or somebody, your older brother, sister, whoever, watching a movie that was way too old for you and scared the ever-loving crap out of you. I mean, we all have an experience like that.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's what we want to avoid.
Right. Like, you have an already teenage son. But, like, for me, like, I have a daughter and then I have a son on the way. And sometimes, you know, I don't want as much as, like, I will educate my children with information about sex and like safe sex and things like that. sometimes I don't, yeah, I really need there to, like, I need them to know what's appropriate to read and also, like, of course, like, what's appropriate to watch, because sometimes in these cutesy contemporary romance books, it's all happily ever afters. It's all like, I mean, how many times do you get, like, unrealistic expectations?
I know.
Don't need Scarlett at 11, 12 years old to be reading these and romanticizing love, like, as much as, like, that's, you know, what everybody wants, right? Like, we want that, like, book romance, like, fairy tale ending. It's not always feasible. So, like, I don't want her romanticizing what mature relationships.
Oh, sure. Even your husband's relationship, you know. Do, you know
that, like, not every single relationship is gonna, you know. Yeah, I need realistic expectations.
Realistic expectations.
And so I think, you know, like, at 11 or 12, she doesn't need to be reading books that are, like, contemporary romances.
I mean, we're in Milking Farm, which, again, great book, but let's be older.
Yeah.
You know? And I get it. And trust me, if this in any way comes off like we are pro-censorship or pro-banning or pro-anything like that, we are not.
No.
We are just want... We don't want to traumatize anybody.
Yeah.
We want all the books to be available to the people who want them.
Yes.
Let the parents decide what the children can read.
Exactly.
Let's not have the state or the federal government decide. Because fuck those bastards.
Okay. So moving into some other things. So Acrylipix announced yesterday that they were going to be doing a Throne of Glass Legacy special edition set. So we know, like, they have, like, their OG one that everybody loves, and, you know, they did the Akator one that everybody loves, and then they did the Rainbow one that was, like, you know, mixed reviews. So they were like, okay, well, now we're gonna do Throne of Glass. And so they, like, put out an Instagram post with, like, kind of like a mock-up of what one of the books were gonna look like, and everybody had an opinion about it, which everybody on the internet does, but they were mostly negative. And I saw it, and I didn't really care for it, to be honest. It's like, it was like orange, but like that super bright orange and blue, like a dark, it didn't make sense. It didn't make sense.
Like the Mets?
Yeah, kind of. Here, I'm going to see if it's still up on my thing, and I can show it to you really quick. But I didn't like it. And so a lot of people felt the same way. And so they have said today, like, okay, we're going to go back to the drawing board and we're going to, like think about it again. So this is...
Oh.
Yeah.
What the fuck even is that on the side? Can I make it bigger? Is it Aelin riding the stag, the North Stag?
So.
Oh, and there's, like, a fire tail. Yeah, this is not.
And so great. That's like that. And then they
posted. It looks like a twink in that picture.
Then they posted, like, because it says new dust jackets coming soon. But then they posted, I think, like, what the dust jacket potentially was going to look like. But anyways, people obviously were just, they were not a fan of it. And so, because it's also very similar to, like, they just did the Fourth Wings.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't really care for the Fourth Wing and the Iron Flame. Because, like, this is what the Throne of Glass looks like, right?
Yeah, that's like.
And so then.
That's ugly.
Yeah.
It seems like a money grab to me. Because how many special copies of Throne of Glass do you need?
And they just did that, like. They did. This is very similar in color concepts to what they did with the rainbow.
The top is nice. It's just that the sides are poop.
Yeah. So they came out and they said, you know, we're going. Oh, here. But they said, you know, we're going to go back to the drawing board. Like, we heard what you guys said. You're not a big fan of it. Like, we're going to try again. So, I mean, at least they're listening and they're not just like.
Well, they kind of have to because they want people to pay $400 for it. If the people don't like it, the people are not going to pay $400 for it.
Yeah. So more to come on that to see kind of what they change and what they keep and stuff like that. So this, like, weekend, Romanticon in Los Angeles is going on. There's lots of authors there. They're talking about the book. I saw a cute, like, little TikTok of LJ Andrews, and it was like her turn to like introduce herself, and she like had a brain fart moment, and she's like, "I'm LJ Andrews." And it just says and like whoever was sitting next to her was like, she's like, "Oh, they're my books," and like it was so cute. And then it moves with that. Raven Kennedy was supposed to attend, and she had to back out at the last minute.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah, so she didn't get to go. But one of the book talkers that I follow, she's there. She's having a great time, and so she's loving it. And I'm kind of sad I didn't go, but I mean, we have a PolyCon right around the corner, so.
True.
And then the last thing is, so last weekend, we recorded on Sunday. I didn't want to talk about it then because it was currently going on, and I kind of wanted this week to, like, get more information, but there was a Starfall Ball in New Jersey, and it was, like, this whole thing, and there was, like, cosplayers, like, super popular, very famous cosplayers were there. Like, there were vendors there. It was like a whole thing.
Well, and they move them around the country. They have a big company that puts these on, and they do it like a couple times a year in different locations.
Well, honestly, like, I can't get a full read on it, but from what I've understood from looking at different people's TikToks, you either really, really loved it, or they had terrible times. So one of the things was they were supposed to have a swag bag and shirts and all of these things. Well, the swag bags were awful. Like, they were, like, see-through, like, super cheap with, like, just, like, stamps. Like, a heart and a star and, like, a crescent moon, like, unicorn just stamp on the front. They were absolutely terrible. And they had, like little stickers and a pencil and an eraser that was in the bag. No shirts. So people were like, you know, we paid, like, top tier to get this swag, and this is the shit that you give to us? And then
there was, like, a piece of candy in there.
Yeah. And then,
like, it was giving, like, the bags that your mom would put together for Valentine's Day for your class.
Yeah. It was like that. And then there was a part of, like, I think a coronation or, like, a mixer or something. And they had, like, the menus, and they were all bookish thing. And the menus had such bad typos. One of them was you could order Tamaland's tears. And so people were just like, it seemed like they, like, these were, like, super last minute things. But then other people had, like, a really great time. Like, I think people that were in the lower tier and they didn't, you know, obviously know the swag bag stuff, or they probably overlooked, or maybe they didn't attend, like, the mixer or something like that. But, you know, they had, like, the fashion show and the cosplayers were there and, like, all the vendors. And it seemed like everything else was fine. It just seemed like the people who had the issues
were the VIP experience.
Yeah. Which, I mean, granted, I totally understand, because I was like, we spent $400+ for my ticket for a PolyCon, because I got Primal and then I added on the brunch and the Q&A, and everything's supposed to come with swag and all this stuff. And yeah, and if I spent almost $500 just to get in the door, and you hand me, like, you know, a see-through, like, bag that if I put three things in it, it's gonna break on the bottom, that's just covered in unicorns, yeah, I'll be pretty pissed too. So yeah, it seems like, yeah, there was lots of mixed reviews. Somebody even commented on one of them that was like, I just came from another video, and was like, are you sure y'all are attending the same event? Because it was just, like, that wild. But I mean, of course, everything, like, There might be some issues, but I feel like swag, if you're going to promote it that heavy and you're going to be like, well, you know, you pay extra, that's something, like, you really shouldn't skimp out on, in my opinion.
No, I agree.
So, but yeah, I mean, all the cosplayers and, like, the fashion show and stuff, like, looked really cool. There was somebody there that, like, makes, you know, all the cosplayers' costumes, and they had, like, a little fashion show, and it looked pretty cool. So,
well,
yeah, I was on Shein today, this morning, because when we go to a PolyCon, they have the coronation, and then they have the other thing.
Yeah, I don't remember what
the masquerade.
Yes, yes.
You know, you can dress up, but I'm going to be 8 months pregnant. So I was like, I was on Shein looking at like maternity dresses. And then, of course, like I have the brunch on Sunday. So I was like, well, I'll just see, like, I'll get a couple of these and see. But I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to end up wearing.
I don't have anything fancy to wear yet. And we're running out of time. So
yeah, which is why I was like looking this morning.
So if I end up in my like Smashing Pumpkins t-shirt,
And then here's the thing is like, they were like, you know, they're, because somebody had posted in the group and they're like, honestly, there's just a mixture. Like people cosplay, people go in like nice dresses, people show up in jeans and a t-shirt, like kind of do whatever. And I might like get a couple dresses and have the best intentions, but honestly, like, just depending on how I feel after days of, you know, 2 days of signings and traveling and whatnot, like I might just roll in there in my maternity pants and an oversized tee. We'll see. Okay. So now.
Okay. I have one more thing to add.
Okay.
So bookish news, but local bookish news. So this weekend, March 1st and 2nd. So yeah, this will come out on Tuesday. So then Saturday and Sunday of this week is the Florida Antiquarian Book Fair in St. Petersburg at the Coliseum. This is the third largest book fair in the United States. There's going to be, I think, 80 bookstores from around the country are going to be present, showing off rare and collectible books. If you're local, it's a really fun event to attend. Shelf Indulgence will be there. We'll be in booth 36, so you should come and say hi to me. But it's a good time. I remember the first time I went, before I was even in like the bookstore book collector world, I walked in there. And somebody had under glass, of course, a first edition copy of The Hobbit. And I cried like a bitch. I was so overwhelmed with like, you know, like just the emotions from like seeing these things. Because I'm a big sucker for signed books. I know I've talked about this. But to me, it's like you're putting yourself like through time, through the same object as the person who wrote it. So like I see a signed book and I'm like, oh my God, like let's say it was a Tolkien, like Tolkien touched this book and now I'm with this book. And it's like, we're besties because, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a very cool thing. I think it's $5 to get in.
Yeah, it's usually expensive. I went like 2 years ago.
And it's not all like $20,000 books. Like there's a range of stuff. Like you can get stuff from $10 up to, you know, $50,000.
Yeah. For sure.
So yeah. Oh, and the other thing, which I was very remiss last week on the episode when I was complaining about my dear friend Tiffany, who has the Bonds the Tie series, the special editions.
Yeah.
I spoke incorrectly. She does not have both special editions. Uh-oh. She did text me to point out that I lied on the radio about her.
Oh, okay.
So I did. All right. Sorry, Tiffany.
But I remember like you telling me like that during the hurricane she sent a picture to you and like the suitcase was just like full of her special
Yes, because I packed up the most important things.
I did the same thing. I pulled books that I could not part with and I put them in my suitcase so they could go to Orlando with me, and the rest I'm like, let's hope and pray.
All right. So I guess we're going to get into it now.
Yep.
All right. Thanks for sticking with us this far. So we're discussing, how does it feel?
Yeah.
Right? At the time of this recording, the Goodreads rating is a 3.76 stars with 61,000, roughly 500 ratings. It's the first book in the Infatuated Fae series. The third book was just released this January. I am unclear as to how many books are going to be in the series.
Four.
Oh. Thanks, Kelsey.
You're welcome.
So this is available on Kindle Unlimited. You can do audiobook version. It is free with Spotify Premium. And then, of course, physical copies, wherever physical copies are sold. It is trad published now.
Yes.
And remember to use bookshop.org for your physical copy. Did you read physical or did you audio?
Physical.
I will say this is my second time reading this book, but we know I'm head empty after I read a book. So I had to go back and I did the audio this time, and it was dual narrator, male and female.
Dual point of view. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would you suggest it as a audio?
I'm gonna get into our spice rating. I'm gonna talk a little bit more about the audio.
Yeah. No, I did it physically because I have the first and the second one because she's an Apollycon author. Which then, fun fact, I didn't buy a signed edition, but mine came signed. Like, there's a
I
little
think it's a
insert.
digital
Yeah.
signature.
Yeah. But so I'll have her like right next to that when we go. Okay, so now let's get into the description of the book. The Human. When a trip into the forest to collect a rare mushroom goes horribly wrong, I find myself falling through a fairy portal and straight into the arms of the Unseelie Fey Prince. The dangerously unhinged and handsome Unseelie Fey Prince. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what the blurb said.
Wow, okay, so. Anyways. I have problems with how that sentence was structured. All right. What could be more horrible than that? He thinks I'm an assassin sent by the humans to kill him, not a biologist. Determined to kill me first and rid himself of the human he has unwillingly grown obsessed with, yet also needing to entertain his people, the villain challenges me to three deadly trials. If I survive, I gain my freedom. But if not, dot, dot, dot. The Fae. I hate this description. The way that it's like structured. The Fae. I've never felt anything but hate and loathing until my eyes found hers, the vile human assassins. I just can't.
Also, they have an apostrophe there, which doesn't belong.
Listen, this is all right. I'm
Yeah.
struggling. Okay.
I copied and pasted this directly from Goodreads, FYI.
She's a parasite that has mercilessly latched onto my mind and won't let me free. My hand itches to be ungloved and feel her smooth skin. All right. How would you know that it's smooth? Okay. Even though I would never. The Unseelie Fae royals would rather burn than touch a repulsive human. I fear that if I do not destroy the girl soon, she may be the only thing that's capable of truly destroying me. That I hated every single second that I had to read that.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess it's pretty accurate.
I mean, it is.
Yeah.
I just hate the way that it's structured. It needs to be redone.
Yeah, there's a bunch of weird in it. Yeah, I copied and pasted this. I did not. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That weird apostrophe that doesn't belong. Apostrophe denotes possession. All right, so the genre for this, fantasy romance, dark romance, fantasy, adult romance,
Romanticy.
romanticy, like
Yeah.
just the regular shit, nothing special.
Yeah. Also, because I like briefly mentioned it at the end of last episode. So when we are deciding between two books, I always have my husband pick a book and I always say, don't ask questions. Here's two titles, pick one. And so it was between God's Games That Gods Play and How Does It Feel? And he picked Games That Gods Play. And then he went like on a, he took the dog on a walk or he did something. And he went and he looked up both books. And then he came home and he was like, so Games God's Play looks like it's right up like your alley on the type of thing that you read, but it's just like Greek. And he's like, however, he goes, how does it feel? I guess whatever he was reading, I don't know if he read the blurb and then he was reading reviews on it, but he was like, a trip to find psychedelic mushrooms is very, he's like, I don't know what it is, but it's something about a trip to see, to find psychedelic mushrooms. And he's like, and I'm now very intrigued. So after we had settled on Games That Gods Play, he came home and he said that, and then we switched it because he's very intrigued about the trip to psychedelic mushrooms. And I haven't told him a single thing about the book, so he's going to still listen to that part.
Right.
Okay, anyways, the trigger warnings. These are straight from the author. There's violence, abuse, physical, mental, emotional, and verbal, kidnapping, death, dying, gore, mental illness, bones, hospitalization, profanity, snakes, sex, and poisoning.
I do not think that the book was really graphic enough to really merit all of these things.
No, not certainly the gore part.
Yeah, I don't think it wasn't overly gratuitously violent or gory.
I
The
agree.
mental illness thing, I don't think that that was really a huge
No,
part of it either.
I don't think so. I agree with the violence. I agree with the abuse. hospitalization is like barely
yeah.
thing. She just like as a kid woke up in the hospital. Like,
I guess we could do death of family members off page.
Yeah.
On there, but
there's definitely sexual explicit material in there. Snakes. There's one trial that talks about like it involves snakes and the female main character is terrified of them. But it's not an overall theme in the book. Same thing with the poisoning. Like, I mean, I guess technically the mushrooms are poisonous, but they happen twice, I think, in the book. And then, like, the trial with the snakes involves poisons. And that's right. Yeah.
So there's a playlist. I did not look at the playlist. I did not think about the playlist. I usually do, but I didn't care. But one thing I did find very strange, and I don't know if this was in the physical or the KU version, but the audiobook, while I was listening to it, the narrator goes, okay, start listening to this song now.
No, that does not happen in the physical.
And I was like, what the fuck?
No, that doesn't happen.
So that was weird. Right before the third trial, she's basically like, cue this song. And I didn't, because that annoyed me.
Yeah, I can't listen to music and read and be engrossed in a book like that. No, thank you. No, that doesn't happen in the physical or on Kindle because I went back and forth a little bit, but
I did go back and forth with reading on the Kindle and listening to the audiobook, of which the chapters on the audiobook do not match up.
I hate when that happens.
The fucking chapters and the pages of the Kindle.
That happened with another book that we just did recently, and it bothered the shit on me.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Dark window.
Single solitary view hole.
Yes. And that bothered me. Okay, so tropes, we have deadly trials, enemies to lovers, a forbidden romance. All true. I will also add in he falls first. And there are like talks of, because they're fey, like mating bonds, kind of like they're mentioned.
Yeah, a lot of traditional fairy tropes.
Yeah.
In general. Which then brings us to our spice rating. Now, I gave this 2.5 jalapenos. There's a lot of stiff members. There's a lot of talk of like my leathers, you know, the straining against my leathers. There's a couple spicy scenes. That one scene, he eats her out at one point, but like they still hate each other, so it's like a hate.
Yeah,
sex.
Yeah, like eats her out from the back. Yeah.
And then some dirty talk.
Yeah, and then we talked about this the other day. I don't know why this is now becoming a trend with all of these newly publicated books. But they don't actually have sex. So the two like big sex scenes are one where he eats out from the back, which happens first. And then the second one is they're just grinding on each other and, like, humping each other, which somehow happens.
Yeah, apparently the publishers and the authors are just bringing dry humping back.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't get it. I didn't get it last week. I don't get it this week. I will say I increased my jalapeno rating after I listened to the audiobook.
Okay.
Versus when I read it the first time, I gave it a 1.5 because it's not super, but hearing the male narrator narrate the spicy scenes and talk about his cock. Yeah, it was pretty good.
Okay.
And he's talking about his cock and all this. And I was like, yes. So listen here. So I gave it a whole extra pepper.
Yeah. When we did Noctacadia, I had the opposite effect. I couldn't. I had to switch from the audio.
Like your inside your body.
His is too cringy. Too cringy. I gave it 2.5 jalapenos too, because I think even though we got a limited amount of scenes, like in which, like how often they were happening and like what was happening in them, I still felt like they were well written for sex scenes. Like I was like, you know, immersed into it. Like I could, you know, pick up on the tension and I think this was like what most enemies to lovers try to be. as far as like the sex scenes before they fall in love.
Yeah, they had excellent like sizzly chemistry.
Yeah,
in the sex scenes, and this really was a true enemies to lovers.
Yeah.
Situation.
Yeah. So I think it was definitely well done, even though there wasn't very much. Okay, so now let's go into Sweet Pepper ratings. I gave it a 3 because, like, okay, so I'm not a fan of how we got to the I'm in love with her, we'll do anything for her type situation.
We talked about that because
we were
so confused.
But once we got there, like, he was quite literally like, I don't give a fuck about customs. I don't give a fuck about what people say. Like, this is, like, she's mine. Like, I love her. I will do anything for her. Like, he, like, you know, and we'll talk about it in the spoiler part, but he does, like, 2 very big things that are, like, huge no-no things in public. Because he's just like, I just straight up don't give a shit. Like, I'm not letting anything happen to her. Like, I don't care how everybody views me. I don't care if people think like I'm weak because I love this human, which is like so different from how he started off, as in like the blurb says, like, I wouldn't even touch her because she's like a human and I'm a fae royal. So yeah. And then of course, you know, the maiming, like, you know, he maims for her and kills for her and all of those things. But yeah, so I gave it 3 jalapenos or 3 sweet peppers for that.
I agree with you. He just loves her. He just all of a sudden just loves her. And loves her so much. And, you know, he's this fear. We'll talk about any characterization. It's just like this literal 180, you know. He hates her. He's, like, literally sending people to kill her. And he's like, I can't wait for you to fucking die, you whore. And then all of a sudden, he's like, which side of the bed would you like to sleep on, honey? And then he's like, literally, he, and I quote, gives her his softest tunic to sleep in.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and again, the usual killing and maiming. But just, yeah. like, literally, yeah, just a 180. A 180.
It happens in like the middle. Like, I don't know, it's crazy. So like when I picked up on it is right after the first time that it is a spice scene, and then all of a sudden it like switches to his point of view and he's like now madly in love with her. And then I think where it grows, and I think that it's done on purpose, is another part which we have to save for the spoiler part. But I think that then, like, enhances his feelings and then, like, kind of kickstarts her feelings almost. But, yeah, I mean, it was kind of, like, super freaking annoying that we just went from, like, yeah, like, they first meet his, like, person, like, stabs her. Then he throws her in the dungeon. Puts a creature in there to kill her. Then he sends, like,
hey. That whole thing was really fucking gross.
Yeah.
Like, actually, now that I think about that, that could be a trigger. That whole, like,
the bog and
sexual assault. Sexual assault. There's a sexual assault scene in the dungeon done by a magical creature.
Yeah.
Trigger warning.
Yeah.
That was gross. That grossed me out.
Yeah. So then he does that, and then he, like, sends in, like, his highly trained assassin to kill her, and then that fails, and then, like, it was so strong, like, the hatred was so strong, and then, yeah, it was, like, after that one sex scene, all of a sudden, he just, like, is, like, oh, yeah, and, like, tells her, I think, almost immediately, like, oh, yeah, like, how's it feel to know that I'm so in love with you, like, gives her, like,
she's, like, what?
Yeah, like, what much to her? And she's like, yeah, what are you talking about? Like, I hate you. Like, I want to kill you. And then he's, like, still trying to kill her after that. Like, after he's like, oh, I love you. And then he's like, now go compete in these trials. And, like, so that you die, so that I don't have to love you. It was wild.
I think that she should get some. She should get some points here, because, well, I don't know. She doesn't like do anything for him. Never mind. I take it. So at one point, when Callie starts having feelings, she recognizes, like, she feels seen, and she like thinks or comments on the fact that she feels like he accepts her darkness, that he sees the darkest part of hers, and that she doesn't have to hide that, and he
Yeah.
sees that and accepts it. And I don't know, I thought it should fall under, or maybe it needs to be mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't have a lot of sweet pepper moments because I think she's still trying to wrap her head around, like, trying not to die.
And she's got other things to worry about.
And like, she's very much holding on to the hatred that she has for him for like quite literally everything he's done to her. And the fact that like he's tortured her, had other people tortured her, tried to kill her multiple times. At one point, when she does start having feelings for him, because I like called it at the beginning, I was like, this is gonna give Stockholm Syndrome vibes. Like, she even mentions that herself, that she's like, do I love him, or like is this like Stockholm Syndrome? Like, she even like recognizes that herself, because he is that terrible to her. Like, he
Yeah,
is.
he's awful.
Yeah.
He's absolutely awful.
From the get-go. Okay, so now let's get into your favorite part.
My favorite part, the smell report. Okay. I purposely kind of left this blank so that you wouldn't know the smell report.
Okay.
So are you ready?
I already know, yeah.
And that smells like a forest fire doused in seductive, lush spices, like pine and cardamom, mixed with something deep and sultry.
Yeah, I saw that and I was like, okay, I'm done reading. Don't need to read anymore. We're back to this.
Okay, actually, this is one of my favorite ones. I don't know, because it's so fucking ridiculous. What kind of spices make you feel like it's time for sexy time? Because of their seductive, lush spices. So apparently, these spices are making us,
So traditionally, if you think about like in the I'm adding like real world things to this, but for example, like way back in the day, Bath and Body Works, when they did their aromatherapy line, they had a sensual line, and it was black currant and rose, I think, or something like that. And like, for some reason, that like stuck in my mind when I was reading this, and I was like, oh yeah, like the sensual line from Bath and Body Works. But I think black currant gets pulled into that a lot. Rose, because I don't know, people
I think
correlate
roses smell
roses.
nasty.
I don't think roses smell at all. Amber gets correlated a lot to it, like musk, like kind of sandalwoody scents.
Okay. Well, that goes into our next. At one point, she goes, I couldn't help but find excitement when I breathed in the amber and cedar fragrance.
Yeah, that's his
So
scent.
she's clenching her thighs together
Yeah.
because the cedar and the amber were causing the excitement. I've never had that reaction to a spice.
No. Yeah, because he even mentions that like they accidentally used his soap on her and he liked that versus her soap, which was lavender and something. I can't remember what the other one was, but like her soap was the lavender soap and they used his soap, which was the amber soap, and he was turned on by the fact that she smelled like his soap. I remember that.
Okay, so I was in fashion today. Yesterday, I sprayed myself with my boyfriend's cologne, like my hoodie, because I like the way it smells.
So,
I was just like doing work around the house, and I was like,
my husband and I have different shower gels, typically, but my husband is so not picky about anything. And he showers like 3 times a day, and so he goes through body. I swear he eats the shit. But he goes through body wash so fast, and like again, because he's not picky, he just uses whatever in the shower. So there's been a couple of times where he's come out of the shower and he smells like me, because he's out of his body wash and he's using mine. Which is like the one I have right now is like a Lavender Luxe. It was a Bath and Body Works, like Emily in Paris one. But then I've had like
the Santal Bloom. I've had, like, there was one that was, like, super, I got it from L'Occitane, and it was a neroli and orchid scent, and so it was, like, super floral, and he's used that before, and I'm like, did you use my body wash? And he's like, it's the only body wash in there, I'm out. And then he actually liked one from L'Occitane that we used to get a lot, and it was an almond scent. But L'Occitane's stupid expensive, so we don't get it anymore.
I've never heard of that brand before, so.
My husband has the opposite, where he just uses, he sometimes accidentally smells like me because he's out of body wash and he won't tell me. So.
That's really cute.
Yeah.
That's so wholesome.
All right, so characterization, and we'll kind of do this quickly because I feel like we've talked about them a lot. How's his name pronounced in audio?
Mendax.
Mendax. Okay, that's how I was reading it, but, you know, you never know with the fucking fake characters. So, yeah, he's the Shadow Daddy, Prince of the Unseelie Fae, unable to feel feelings. That's, yeah, fair. He's unable to control his wingspan hard on while Callie's around. Kills for funsies. I mean, that's fair. Yeah, because, like, I've seen in a couple other Fae books where they have wings and they, like, pop out. You know, it's supposed to be, like...
And they say in this book that a male's wings only come out when they want to fight or fuck.
Yeah.
And he has smoke wings. He's a little shadow daddy, smoke daddy, whatever. And, yeah, so his wings will just, like, poof.
Yeah.
Every once in a while. Yeah. Unable to help himself.
Yeah. Okay, Callie, she's a human scientist studying a rare moth, falls through a portal to fairy. Animals are drawn to her. Yeah, that's pretty fair.
So, interesting side note. When I was little, and I don't think my grandma was like a superstitious person, but she always told me that if I ever saw a ring of mushrooms, never to step into it. Not something that I remember hearing as, like, a 5 and 6 year old, like, a young child. We're not a, like, Celtic descent or anything like that.
Specifically about mushrooms, I've heard that if you see a perfect circle in the middle of the woods, it's a fairy trap. Or, like, if you see a perfect archway in between two trees, it's a fairy trap. Like, so I've seen, like, that lore around. But nobody in, like, my immediate family or anything has, like, warned me about those things. They're just things, like, I've read or I've seen on the internet that people are like, yeah, if you see this, it's a fairy trap. Or, like, have shown, like, pictures of stuff. Like, there's one of, like, this girl, she was walking through the woods and she found a perfect circle of stones. And she was like, yep, that's a fairy trap, not going anywhere near it. So I haven't seen that it's specifically about mushrooms, but I have seen that, like, that, like, that.
Like, can, symbolism.
Yeah,
I think that kind of sums it up about who our people are, really, at their core.
Yeah, I mean, he, like, the two other big things to kind of, like, add is, like, he enjoys killing, and that's the only time he ever feels any feelings. Is when he's killing, and he will quite literally kill anybody, men, women, and children. So he's a little bit more morally black than gray. And Callie is just kind of like a lonely person. Like, her big thing was she wanted to get a job, and they didn't want to give it to her because they were afraid, like, because she's so young, she was going to want to run off and get married and have babies. And she's like, yeah, no, fuck that. I want to follow the moths.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I think she was pretty smart. Like, in her, when she was in human, you know, in the human realm or whatever, I don't know. I liked her as, like, that character. She seemed like, you know, just, like, smart and kind of snappy. She loved animals. She was, like, her own person. She was independent. She didn't need a man, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. Because she had, like, in the story, like, she had this guy that was, like, pining for her or whatever, and she's like, yeah, no, like, not interested, don't need you, like, and even said, like, I should probably, like, distance myself from him because I don't want him to get the wrong impression, because I'm very much focused on me and me alone, so, yeah. World building, yeah, it's pretty standard in fairy realms. You know, they have the Seelie and the Unseelie. They do use of true names, mental bonding, marriage bonding, and bargains. Yeah.
Wait, the Luna Moths are real?
Yeah, Luna Moths and Destroying Angel Mushrooms are actually real. They are real things that you can find in our realm. The Destroying Angel Mushrooms are actually the most toxic mushroom. There is no known antidote. And Luna Moths are as they are described. They are green sherbet moths, and they are not rare, but they are nocturnal.
That's really cool that they pulled in, like, that she pulled in real life things. I did not, you know, because, like, most of the things that are in these romantic fantasy books are not real, even if they say, like, they partake in the real world. So, yeah, that's actually pretty cool that they're actually real. All right, so now let's get into our overall ratings of the book.
I gave it 3 generous stars.
Okay.
I'm giving it 3 stars just because I still had a good time, even though I didn't love anything particularly much. I don't know much to say. I can't really expand upon my 3 stars. That's just what you get. You get what you get. You get 3 stars.
Okay. I get this 4.5 stars.
Well, I saw that on Goodreads.
I cannot tell you why. There's not a single thing that happened in this book. Or, like, it's not even that it has a great writing style. It's not like the chemistry is off the charts. I have no idea why I enjoyed this book as much as I did. I binged it. I finished it in 3 days. I loved it. It hooked me. And, like, I will say the beginning is very slow, and it was kind of hard to get into. Like, the whole time she's, like, in the human realm, and it's, like, setting up her backstory or whatever. I was not bought into that, didn't really care for it. But then as soon as she fell into, like fairy realm, I was just, like, hooked. Like, at this point, you guys all know, I have a toddler and I'm pregnant. Like, 10:30 is the absolute latest that I am awake. And at one point, my husband had to, like, keep getting on me because it was, like, midnight and I was still reading. And I finally had to, like, that hasn't happened to me in a very, very long time.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened with this book, but sometimes a book just hits you. You just enjoy it. You're in the zone, especially if you're a new reader and it's just what you want at that time.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I wish I could tell you why I thoroughly enjoyed this book. I wish I could tell you there's a reason why I thoroughly enjoyed this book, but there isn't. I just did. It sucked me in and it held me all the way through to the point where I was like, dying to want to, like, go into the second book because I had the second book and I didn't. It was good.
Good.
But yeah, I don't know. It got me.
I do want to read the second book eventually.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing this is for your shelf, Kels.
Yeah, it is. It is for my shelf. I mean, I already got a physical copy because she's going to get a Polycon. So she is somebody's whose table I will be stopping at to get it signed. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. I was very surprised that I really enjoyed it because it is just like a bowl of mac and cheese.
Speaking of a bowl of mac and cheese, it would be remiss if we didn't mention this. So while we're talking about ratings, I do like to, after I'm done like reading a book, look at the Goodreads ratings. And I have to give a special shout out to Haley Jean on Goodreads for her 1-star review of this book, where she wrote, kind of like Akatar, if you got it off TV.
I mean, that's fair.
But it made me laugh so fucking hard. So thank you, Haley G.
Yeah. Okay, guys. So that is going to be it for our spoiler-free part of our review. So join us next week for our review of God Killer by Hannah Kaner. Now we're going to jump into the spoiler part of our review.
All right, you guys still with us? All right, welcome back. All right, so can I go first?
Yes.
Okay. So she's an assassin the whole time.
Yes.
Right? She's an assassin the entire time. We spend the entire book, and she is like, I am not an assassin. I am not an assassin. Her internal monologue is I am not an assassin. I am Callie Peterson. I am a biologist. I live at this blah, blah, blah. Like, I am not an assassin.
Yeah, like, the first 60 pages are done to prove that she's not an assassin.
Right.
She's a biologist. She just fell. She was following Moss and fell through a hole.
There is no allusion to her being an assassin. There is really nothing leading up to this. And it pissed me off. Because I don't think that the author, like... There's a way to write this to where we're surprised or to lead us, but she just tricked us.
There are clues towards the very end of the book. Towards her going into the third trial, there are clues. She mentions half of her heart.
Well, that yeah, but that's different.
Like, she mentions, her training is different. She mentions a deal that she has. She mentions, like, that, especially in the third trial, she mentions that, like, the only way that they're both gonna, like, she's never gonna see him again, like, you know, she, like, that, it, like, after the trial ends, like, it's a done deal, like, she mentions that the only way that they both make it out is, like, if she, like, makes it to the portal and, like, disappears before, like, he can get to her, because she knows, like, that he'll never let her leave because he said that. And then, like, of course, right before the big betrayal happens, she said that, like, him being distracted by the thing, and why did he have to, like, why did he have to do that? Because now he's left her with no choice.
But, yes, all of those things, they do mention the half a heart thing multiple times and the bargain. And then we can extrapolate, basically, that, you know, when she met the fairies when she was a kid, and that her friend Ellie, who they mentioned throughout, is probably a fairy. Like, we get that. But she's fighting these things, right? She has the forest fog that's put in her cell, and her internal monologue is like, how am I going to, what am I, a puny human, going to do against this creature? You know what I mean? It's, she tricked us in that sense. Because if you were an assassin, your internal monologue would be like, okay, go for the weak points, do this, you know what I mean? There would be something in your training that would imply that you have had training, or that you... Like, your mind is just not going to be blank of your assassin training.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a reflex. And you're not guarding your thoughts. It's not like anyone's reading your thoughts here. You know what I mean? So it's not like she can protect her thoughts. And the only thing that I could say, maybe that we could give the author for being clever, is the fact that the mantra that she repeats, I am Callie Peterson, I live here. Maybe that's like, so that if she gets tortured or she's out of it, that she can, like, relay that information, like, verbatim. Yeah. That's the only thing that I'll give this author. Otherwise, I think she did a shit job.
I think you did, because you didn't pick up on it. No, I think she actually did a great job with it. I think that plot twist is not something that we're used to or see very often.
And yeah, with the chick being the villain, I love that.
In, like, these, like, romanticy books, especially when it's a fae and a human and blah, blah, and they fall in love and blah, 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 blah. So I enjoyed that plot twist. I will say that. And I think it sets up for a very interesting second book. My biggest thing is I was always going, I thought she was going to be the most special of special. I thought she was going to be, like, the lost, forgotten, like, Seely or whatever. I still think that she's not fully human. Like, I mean, I don't know, I still think that she's, like, what they call him, like, the Fallen or something. But, yeah, I mean, I guess maybe not, because they kind of, like, sum up, like, why she knows the Seely Queen and all that. But no, I actually kind of really enjoyed that plot twist at the end.
I'm not saying that I didn't enjoy it. I'm saying that it was unrealistic in the sense that your internal monologue would betray you at some point.
Yes, but it's also a book about fairies.
Yeah, well, it doesn't mean we can't write it well. Okay.
Okay, so another thing they have. So at the very beginning, like, when she gets stabbed or whatever, and then, like, the fox comes and, like, cries on her or whatever, and we are like, oh yeah, she's like in the process of dying. Apparently she actually died. Like they mentioned that at the end. He's like, no, like, dude, you were dead. Like, I brought you back to life. So I'm interested to see, because like they were both kind of like shocked at the other one remembering that. So I don't know if that like means anything. But yeah, I mean, they were both like, she's like, what do you mean dying? He's like, well, what do you mean that you remember that? And I guess it's like to protect his sister or something. I don't know.
Yeah, because they're not supposed to step in and interfere with humans.
Yeah. So that was an interesting part too. I didn't, you obviously weren't supposed to know until the very end that she actually died. And then, yeah, so like in the third trial, so of course, like he tells her his true name. Like they make it a point. She makes it a point, like when she's like meeting like all these other characters and they're like, never say your true name. Don't give anybody your true name because it holds like power over them. And she's like, well, I don't give a shit. Like, my name is Kelly Peterson, which then, spoiler alert, at the end, that's not her name. But Mendex actually gives her his true name because, like,
Because he loves
because
her.
he loves her. And then they end up like bonding, like marriage bond in the middle of like a room right before the second trial. Which again, like, was one of the things that, like, I don't know, like, it kind of annoyed me. Like, I think that's probably why I didn't give it 5 stars. And I was like, one, the 180 to like all of a sudden he hates her to then now he's like fully in love with her. And then two, to like the mating, the like the
Well, he
bonding.
bonded with her so that Dasili couldn't take
Yeah.
her. Like, that
Yeah.
was like a choice and against her wish,
Yeah.
obviously. And yes, spoiler, her best friend growing up was the Dasili prince.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know.
His name is pronounced
I read it
because that's
as E.
Aurelius.
I read it as Eli. But yeah, so then now they're like bonded and they can feel each other in their heads or whatever and like talk to each other. And then, yeah, so see, like in the third trial at the end, he intervenes because the mom like switched the doors or whatever. And so like the beast like comes after her and he jumps down and then like kills the beast and lets her go free. I'm still unconfirmed as to exactly who witnessed all of this, but then like yeah, she like killed him, like stuck the blade underneath, because I guess there's like a spot in between like their torso and their wing.
Well, she thinks she killed
Yeah,
him,
she
but
thinks she
he
killed
had the foresight to not tell her exactly where to stab. Like, there's that one scene where he's like, "Oh, stab me right here," but he was lying.
Yeah, because he said, well, if he was just a regular Fae, like that would be a killing blow. But because he's not, it didn't kill him. So she leaves Faerie. She confirms that she was an assassin, but she wasn't sent by the human. She was sent by the Seelie Queen. And so she confirms that like everything he thought about her was correct, but she did love him and she stabs him. And so she leaves Faerie land, goes through the portal back to the human realm, and firmly believes that he is dead.
Which I don't know how she could, because all of a sudden she's got smoke powers.
Yeah.
Right, through their bond.
Which
So if he
they.
was dead, she probably wouldn't have those smoke powers, would
Well,
she?
because Ellie was in the room with her when like that happened, and he was like, well, maybe it's because like he died, so you, because like that was the thing, like when you bond, like it's why he never bonded with anybody, because when you bond you split your powers,
Right.
like you give half of your powers to like you're bonded. And so I think that was their way of trying to rationalize, well, like, okay, well, you killed him, and so like you absorbed like his half of the powers or
Okay.
whatever. So that's like their thought. But yeah,
That
no,
makes sense. So they could still think he's dead.
yeah, so no, but he's very much alive. Yeah. And then like the bargained her half of her heart away. So like her mom and sister died when they were young, and so she wanted to go and live in like the Seelie court because like of her best friend. And so the mom was like, well, you just don't let anybody in, like you have to prove your loyalty, as if like her as a child not saving the queen from dying, like isn't loyalty enough. I don't know, whatever. And so somehow that alludes to, like, I was always confused on that. Like, how does that equal, like, giving half of your heart away? Because you would think, like, okay, loyalty, you would then complete this task for nothing other than, like, loyalty. Like, she's quite literally completing this task for the other half of her heart. Like, how does that prove loyalty?
Yeah, that's true.
Like, to prove loyalty, in my opinion, it's when you have nothing else to gain.
And was there another reason why half her heart was being held? Or this was the only reason?
I think that's the only reason.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Kelsey.
Yeah.
So the queen was like, I'm going to take half your heart and you're going to go and kill this guy?
Yeah, and that somehow proves that you're loyal enough to the Seelie courts.
It wasn't necessarily, because you might just really want your heart back.
Which is what she wants.
Right. Well, I mean, I think she also does want to live in Seelie. Yes. She did.
She did. She
starts to feel weird about Ellie at the end when she wakes up in the hospital. And
yeah.
She's getting this kind of, like sexual attention from him, almost. She, like, perceives
well,
him.
Because, like, she fell in love with Mendix.
I know, but it was never like that between them.
Yeah, she said she looks at him as, like, a brother.
Right, but he's looking at her differently now, and she's kind of, like, peeved out by it.
Well, yeah, because his wings popped out.
Has been hard.
Yeah. So yeah. So I don't know. Maybe that's, like, undone on purpose. But yeah, that to me proves nothing, because now she's in love with him. I can only assume, like, because
unless she, the only thing I can think of is, like, did she take her heart so that she felt less pain about, like, her family dying? That's never discussed.
No,
but that could be, like, a reason.
No, I'm pretty sure that that was, like, she traded half of her heart
for this possible chance to go to Fairy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weird.
I don't know. I have questions. I'm going to have to read the second book.
Yeah, you'll have to let me know what happens.
Yeah, so I'm going to start God Killer, and that's only like 200 and some pages, and then hopefully, like, I can also read the second book.
We need to have a possible disclaimer about our episode maybe being a couple days late next week.
Yeah, because you got a lot going on.
I have a lot going on. It's the book fair this weekend. It is. Today is what? Today is Sunday. I have to be ready by Thursday night. I'm not ready.
Yeah.
I have to pack up hundreds of books.
I got a garage sale. Well, okay, guys. So that is going to be it for our review of How Does It Feel by Janine O'Reilly. Join us next week, possibly a couple days late, for our review of God Killer by Hannah Kaner. All right.
Bye with besties.
Bye with besties.